Hey everyone, and welcome to the first episode of Nurse Talk. We'll have a special guest today, and we'll be discussing COVID and how it's affected our lives within the last year. She's a former colleague of mine, and she's probably the only person I know whose dog can understand three languages. Everybody, please welcome Lisa.
Thanks so much for joining us today for our first episode of Nurse Talk.
Of course. I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, yeah. So Lisa's been a travel nurse, and she has recently begun transitioning into being a critical care nurse in the Army. How long have you been doing travel nursing?
Travel nursing, I've been doing for about 3 years. I've actually been a nurse for 5. Started out on the floor with you, of course, on neuro, fun times. Got my year experience, went to ICU, got my year experience there, and then just went to the travel world.
Awesome. And where all have you done travel nursing? What states have you been to?
Georgia and Florida mainly.
Okay. Awesome. Awesome. I know you recently just finished up in Tampa, wasn't it?
It was St. Pete, gotcha. Same area.
Gotcha. Now, as far as you transitioning to be a critical care nurse in the Army, what exactly does that entail?
Okay. So, in the Army, they're doing things a little bit differently now. Usually as a critical care nurse, you train as if you're going overseas in combat, but you also have to keep up on your skills. So what they're doing now is what's called a MAP team. And basically, you'll still do your hours in the hospital to keep up with your skills, but you'll also be doing field training. So you'll be simulating field hospitals as if you're overseas in combat, taking care of the soldiers and the other people injured in those areas.
Oh, wow.
And then also we will be doing humanitarian missions. So anything stateside or overseas, if they need any help and need to call the Army to help out, we will be doing humanitarian missions like that too. So
that's
I'm excited
awesome.
About that, especially for, you know, COVID. They need a lot of help now. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, that'll be awesome. I mean, we definitely need those people on the front lines, not only, you know, fighting COVID in the hospitals, but also on the front lines helping the soldiers and everybody else.
Yes, definitely. And they can use all the help they need, especially right now.
Oh, yeah. So for me, I wasn't necessarily on the front lines. We, you know, were delayed with surgeries or couldn't do surgeries for a while just because ours are elective surgeries. And we did have to cut back in clinics. But for somebody being on the front line helping with COVID, what was that experience like?
Oh, well, it's heartbreaking for the things that we see, honestly, especially in the ICU. I mean, we see the worst of the worst, but COVID hit and nobody was prepared for that. The patients in the ICU that have COVID are severely sick. They're already sick patients in the ICU, but with COVID on top of it, it was just a whole nother level.
Right.
Most of the time they try to keep the nurse to patient ratio, you know, one nurse, two patients. And if they're really sick, they do a 1-to-1. Well, nurses are already short, you know,
right.
In staff, in the medical field, all staffing is short. And so sometimes we'd be tripled. Sometimes we would be quadrupled. And that leads to patient unsafety and staff unsafety. But you have to do what you have to do because these people are dying and need to be taken care of. They are on multiple drips, anywhere from like 8 to 15, 20 drips.
Man, where do they even find enough IV poles for that?
We were running out of so many resources. Nobody was prepared for any of this, I
Good
swear.
Gracious.
We actually had to get innovative and come up with an idea of how we can cluster care because, you know, those IV poles go off for no reason all
oh,
the
yeah.
time. Or if it's
all
something.
All the time.
I know. Shoot, we want to throw those out the window just like the patients. They get aggravated. And with COVID, any type of stimulation just throws them over. So you want to limit the stimulation. You want to limit the times you go in because of exposure. You want to limit messing with the patient so they don't crash on you because they are very, very sensitive. So we did have to get innovative, and we came up with an idea of the MRI tubing connecting so we can have the poles outside of the rooms. So we don't have, we don't have to don on all that PPE and then go in there. And then sometimes, you know, life gets busy in the ICU. So sometimes you don't realize your drips are running low until the last minute. And you don't, you know, if they're maxed out on pressors, which usually they are, or on their sedation, they're also on paralytics. They have to be paralyzed because they want their lungs to rest as much as possible.
Right.
And take off that workload for those type of patients. And when they're on all that and, you know, it's so many medications that you're switching out and you're trying to keep up with. And if you have multiple patients, they really should be one-on-one patients, really,
right,
for how sick they are. But if you have multiple patients, you don't have time to change out all those drips and put on all that equipment. Or if they're crashing, you know, it takes like a few minutes to get in there.
Right, and which can definitely delay the care. I mean, if a patient is crashing, you got to first put on all the equipment and then go actually help the patient.
Exactly, exactly. And so, you know, when their pressors are running low and you need to change it out or it has an air bubble and it stops, you're in another patient's room. If that pole is in that room with the patient, and sometimes you can't even hear it, you know, because they're on airborne precautions. We would put baby monitors in the room too, so that way we can hear things in the room as well. Like
that's really,
you know,
smart.
Yeah, you had to get creative.
Yeah.
So we found other reasons to use baby monitors.
That's awesome.
Another thing is rotary beds. They have to be on rotary beds, and most hospitals only have one, two rotary beds. And if you have an ICU full of COVID patients ventilated and need on paralytics and need to be turned all the time, it takes a team to turn those patients. It takes about five or six of us to turn one patient, and to get all five or six of us together at one time to turn all those patients, it's difficult. But kudos to everyone who has come together, and it's been almost a year and we are still doing this. Everybody's getting burnt out from this, though.
Oh, I can only imagine.
Yes, like everywhere else in the world, things seem like they have gone back to somewhat normal, but in the hospitals, no, they
now,
haven't.
Tell me if this is correct or not. You know, like I said, I haven't dealt with actual patients in the hospital necessarily, just because I'm orthopedics and, you know, that's what we see. But they say that once a patient goes on the vent, it is very unlikely that they will actually be able to come off. So generally they either stay on and the patient or the family has to make a decision, or they just pass away.
Yes, that is true. Once you get somebody with COVID on the vent, it is extremely hard to get them off the vent. And they end up on high amounts of PEEP on the ventilator. They end up still desatting. That's why we put them also on paralytics to help take that workload off. It's kind of like, you know, how Foley, you have to retrain your bladder if you've had it in for so long. Well, with the vent, the longer you're on the vent, even before COVID, sometimes it can be hard to get patients off if they've been on it for a long time. That's why we like to try to get patients off the ventilator as quick as possible, but also safely. But with COVID's a whole nother ballgame, to where we just have so much trouble because we do these breathing trials. Well, first they got to be off the paralytics, but they have to have their lungs rest. So once all that's said and done, they're off the paralytics, the pressors, and all the other stuff that's going on with them. We have to do breathing trials, and having to retrain your lungs is a lot harder than retraining your bladder, especially with a patient, because COVID attacks the lungs, the heart muscle, the kidneys, and the brain.
All vitals.
Yes, and important. Yes, and also your blood. It can cause blood clots. Your
right.
Blood
to That's clot what up. I've heard the most. Like, I've heard some strange things as far as like people who have had COVID. I've heard of hair loss. You know, general joint pain. But one thing, and I've told many people this, like just because of the stories I've heard, is people have gotten PEs so much after COVID. And so I know a lot of people would start aspirin just to be on the safe side and make sure they, you know, they kept their blood a little bit thin so they wouldn't develop those blood clots.
Yes. Yes. They're on all types of meds. And the thing is especially like when COVID first came out, now, you know, we have a little bit more research so we can understand it a little bit more, but COVID is so different for everybody. I personally had COVID before and, you know, I'm a healthy individual. I work out, I eat right, I'm young, so forth. But COVID doesn't care who you are, where you're from, your age, anything. It doesn't care. And it affects people randomly.
And that's what the problem, I think that's the biggest problem, is there's no rhyme or reason to it. Like,
no.
At first they're like, oh, it's just the elderly or the people with all the comorbidities. But I mean, like you said, you know, you had it, and what was, I mean, did you develop all the symptoms or?
Yes, I had all the symptoms, but also I think it's, your exposure. So
right.
Say you're, just around someone who has it for like 5 minutes, you might get mild symptoms. But if you're around someone who has it and you're all up in their face or whatever for like 30 minutes, an hour, you have higher doses of that virus. So you're more prone to get more of those symptoms. So that can have something to do with it too.
Okay.
Now, I do know that in the hospital, like I said, COVID is very random and it doesn't care who you are, but a lot of people that were hospitalized in the ICU that I noticed were Hispanics. Hmm. Now, I don't know if it's something genetic or maybe it's because, you know, the culture is something, unfortunately, you know, it could be the diet or, you know, a lot of families live together and stuff like that. So there's so many variables to where it's hard to pinpoint exactly the reasoning behind it.
Right.
But I did notice that while I was in the ICU, and I thought that was kind of weird. I was like, why is it mainly them that's being hospitalized that's so sick? But, you know, that's also Florida, so it could be
kind of
totally
depends on the
different.
Population of the state.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
So, you know, I can only go by what I see or whatever, and it could be different elsewhere. But from my friends that also travel, they've noticed the same thing as well.
Interesting. Well, my sister had it, and she's my identical twin, and she only lost her smell and taste, and then she had just a mild head cold. That's it. Now, my parents got it at the exact same time, and they're in their mid-50s, and they had a fever for like 10 days. I mean, they were super sick. My mom ended up developing like bilateral pneumonia. So they had to be put on antibiotics and all the full 9 yards. They never were hospitalized, but even they got it at the same time, like just the difference of severities is just nuts.
Yes. Yes. My boyfriend got it. My aunt was the one that gave it to us. And it affected them differently than me. I had a fever of 102.7. I had, cough, like all the flu symptoms, basically body sweats. I even had pneumonia on top of it too. Yeah, I had the loss of smell and taste. I had it all, and I was like, oh my gosh, I take care of myself, what is going on?
And you know, that's the biggest thing too, is like, you know, of course we have to protect the general population, but we have to protect the people in the hospital as well. Like if there's nobody to be there to support those patients, whether it be the nurse, whether it be, you know, the cleaning people, I mean, because they were the vital part of
oh,
this.
Yes. Oh,
you know,
yes.
If everybody gets it, then the patients even suffer, because then everybody else is the patients, you know what I mean?
Exactly. Yes. And then that's why also we don't have visitors too a lot. It's heartbreaking, like, to have your
right.
family member and you can't visit, and they die sometimes, most of the time,
right.
unfortunately. And it's like, we have to limit this virus, because one, if our hospitals get overwhelmed and our healthcare system crashes, then we're all, you know, screwed.
Right.
And it's frustrating in the hospital because we haven't had a break. And that's why I'm like, if you know anybody in the hospital, please, please, that works or even is in there, just wear a mask. It's simple. I mean, it's a safety measure. You wear your seatbelt. You do the speed limit. You wash your hands if you work with food. You have to wear clothes in public.
I only sometimes do the speed limit. It just depends.
Yeah, I know.
I'm just kidding.
I go over.
But I definitely, I wear my mask. I mean, I hate wearing it. Of course, I got to wear it during the day when we're seeing patients or we're in the hospital. But I mean, even going to Publix, going to the grocery store, I definitely still wear my mask.
Yeah.
And then I still limit trying to actually go out any other place. Like me and my husband just went and had a date like last week for the first time in almost a year, just because we would do takeout and things like that. But actually going and sitting in a restaurant, we haven't wanted to do that.
Yeah. I mean, we all want to go back to norm and everything, but I have the antibodies, but I still wear my mask because I don't want to pass it to anybody if there was any chance I could. And then also it's for their safe, you know, for their mental
Right.
well-being as well.
Right.
And it's simple. It's not a big deal. Now I'll tell you what though, in the military, we do PT tests and we run and we have to do it in masks. That is hard.
Oh my gosh. I can't even run from here to the end of the driveway without a mask.
I know.
I know I can run with a mask.
Yeah. I had a friend that got COVID. She works in the ICU as well. And she ended up having issues for 6 weeks and was out of work because of it. And she struggles wearing that mask. After you have COVID and you have to wear a mask, it sucks. It's horrible. You're short of breath all the time. You can't breathe in it. But you got to do what you got to do, you know,
right,
for the greater good. And if I can take any ease to limit this virus and wear this mask and help my co-workers and the patients, you know, suffering, then I'll do my part. It's not a big deal.
Right. Now, because you have the antibodies, have you gotten the vaccine yet?
No, I haven't. I know they're limited on vaccines. I don't know if the military is going to make me get it or not, but I wanted other people to get it that need it more because they are limited on the vaccines.
Right.
I'll eventually get mine, but right now I should be good because I do have the antibodies and there are a lot more people that need it more than I do.
Right. I had the opportunity to get it. But the biggest thing for me, also because they're limited, I wanted the elderly patients to get it first, the people with all the comorbidities and things like that. But also, they really don't have much data as far as women in their childbearing years. And I don't have any kids, and I definitely want some eventually. And
yeah.
So I was a little nervous about that. So that's one reason why I didn't get it. And a lot of the women I've talked to have said the same thing.
Yeah, yeah. I don't have kids either, and you know, but you there are so many vaccines out there. Like, you know what the flu shot is and all that and the other vaccines. It's just where, you know, they take the dead virus and manipulate it and put it in your
right.
body and stuff. So there are so many vaccines out there to where I don't think it'll cause infertility or anything. But I mean, we don't know yet. This is still new. We're learning as we go. So we'll find out.
That's for sure. That is for sure. Well, I'm hoping, you know, I've talked to a lot of people. A lot of people have gotten it. But it's so crazy how, you know, some patients will have symptoms after the, you know, first or second vaccine. And then some people will have no symptoms at all.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, it's so random and weird, this whole COVID thing. So we're all trying to figure it out as
oh,
we
yeah.
go along. But it's... And things are updating constantly. Like, I remember it would be this way, this minute, and then 10 minutes down the road, it's this way now. And I'm like, oh, I can't keep up with all these
right.
changes.
Now, tell me a little bit as far as, you know, what are the nurses feeling in the hospital having to deal with this?
Burnt out, overwhelmed. We honestly don't... The reasons why we got into nursing, we
right.
lose sight of. So we always have to help each other out and remind each other that, because we're the ones that's going to carry each other through. And It's so, everyone's so burnt out. Our faces hurt, our heart hurts, our body aches. We don't have time to eat. We don't have time to drink. You're constantly wearing that mask, the N95 and the surgical. You're dehydrated. You do not have time to take that mask off and go get some water. You don't have time to go to the bathroom. You don't have time to eat. We don't have time to take care of ourselves. And we're taking care of these really sick people. So everybody is so burnt out. We're short on resources. We have In the beginning, we didn't have hardly any resources, equipment, staff, nothing. Now we have equipment and stuff, but we're still short on
Right.
staff
I mean,
compared
'cause we were short
to.
on nurses before this even started.
I know. And once this settles down, honestly, like a lot of my friends are like, I'm done with nursing. They're like, I'm quitting after all this. The only reason some of them have quit, but some of them haven't. And it's because they don't want to leave more of a burden on those who are
Right.
staying. Now, whether they quit indefinitely, that's a different story, but they're going to take a break. So there's going to be a shortage after this settles
Oh my
down.
goodness. And I know, I mean, had especially in the ICU, I mean, teamwork had to have played a huge factor in caring for COVID
Yes.
patients.
Teamwork plays a huge factor in caring for critical patients, but for COVID is very, 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 very needed. So when you have a high turnover, that's another thing. You have a high turnover rate in nursing on floors. So you don't even have time if your turnover rate is really high to develop, that teamwork, especially if everyone's new, and they're either traveling. A lot of people are going to travel nursing, which I highly recommend. Best decision I ever made. But also, hospitals need to start taking care of their staff to keep
Right.
them on so they don't go to travel nursing. But yeah, I know one of my friends, she just spent a lot of money on a facial. This was like right before COVID hit. And she ended up wearing that mask, and you have breakouts, you have, pressure ulcers, everything. Tegaderm is going to be
Oh
your
my
best friend
gosh.
with that
She'll have to reward
mask.
herself for enough with another facial.
Right? Once this all settles
Good
down. So,
gracious. I can only imagine the teamwork that, I mean, especially if you have a patient who's crashing or, something of that where you have to, one, make sure the patient doesn't die, but also, make sure those other patients, while everybody is in that specific patient's room, the other patients are being taken care of.
yes. Yeah. Yeah, that's the other thing. Like, okay, when COVID first came out, and especially the hard hit areas, me and several of my friends that went to Texas and New York, we were coding each nurse, okay, was coding five of their patients and having, people die left and right. We had five patients each a day
Good
die in the
gracious.
beginning. You didn't even have time to treat. You like I never ever overseas, in the military, I would expect this, but here in the United States, I would have never expected to have to, do priority care for triage. Like, hey, you're not gonna make it, but I can save this patient, so all my resources are going to this patient. Like, I never ever thought I'd have to do that in the United
Right.
States. So teamwork is very, very important because that when it first came out, we didn't even have time really for teamwork. We were just coding people left and right. Now, things are settling down a little, but they're still bad. But we're relying on that teamwork. Even before COVID, I'll tell you a situation that I had. I was at a trauma burn unit, a level one. It was my third day on my travel assignment, and we only get one day of
Oh,
orientation. And
geez.
I had a patient, yes. this is how they welcomed me to the trauma burn ICU, which honestly, that is my favorite hospital I've ever worked at. And the staff is amazing, the manager is amazing, the doctors are amazing, everybody there is great. If I have family that had to go to a hospital, I'd want them to go to that one. But it was the third day I was there, and I was getting a patient. She was being air vac'd to me from another hospital. She was maxed out on all pressors. She went into labor. Her placenta abrupted, and so she got sent over to us. Her baby was fine, thank God. But she was crashing and going downhill quick. When I received the patient, you have limits on drips, on how high you can
Right.
go. Well, the flight nurse is like, "This is the sickest patient I've ever had, and I've been a flight nurse for a while." I was like, "Oh,
Welcome to the
great."
hospital.
Right? And so she was like, "I went above the allotted amount because in nursing, you have to do what you have
Right.
to do to keep your patient alive. Sometimes you have to bend rules, unfortunately. Go with your nurse gut, your nursing judgment. I've saved people's lives plenty of times because I went either around or above some of the physicians and
Right,
all.
and it's not
I
all
don't know.
textbook either. Like you learn all this stuff in
Yeah.
nursing school, and it's like, okay, forget what you learned in nursing school. It has nothing to do with that.
Exactly. And it's like, importance is keeping the
Right.
patient alive. You got to do what you got to do. But anyway, so she went above those drips, and it worked because she got her to me and everything. And I didn't even see my other patient the whole entire shift. But teamwork is so important because there were 20 of us in that room taking care of this one
Good
patient.
gracious.
Okay. And thank God nobody else on the floor like was crashing or anything, because this lady needed everybody, even the director, the manager, like everybody, all hands on deck. She got MTP'd, mass transfusion protocol. I gave her 7 coolers within a couple hours. And the blood products that we were giving her were, as fast as they were going in, they were coming
Good
right out.
gracious.
Oh my God, this lady, like the ventilator stopped working because she was just swelling up and third spacing and everything. She was in full blown DIC.
Oh, well, that's great.
Yes. And she looked like Barney purple. She started getting purple and she was just swelling everywhere. And the vent was, bucking and everything. So we had to manually bag her as we're giving her all this blood product. The floor, the bed, everything is full of blood. We have suctioning everywhere, full of blood, trying to suction all the blood. Like literally, as fast as we are putting it in her, it's coming right out. And the doctor was, got the husband on the phone and was like, "Look, if I don't do surgery," or he was like, "If I do surgery, your wife's gonna die because she's just bleeding out. And if I cut her, she's gonna bleed out more. But if I don't do surgery, she's going
So
to die."
either way.
So, yes. So we're like, "Well, let's die trying, And she was too unstable to go to surgery. So we had to do surgery at bedside.
Good gracious.
And best doctors on the team. And oh my God. I think it was like 4 days later because I didn't go to work the next day, which was good because I was like, "Oh my God, that about killed me taking care of
Right.
that lady." Like, oh, the documentation, like, we didn't even have time to document. We don't even know what all happened. I mean, the nurse manager was trying to type everything as it was happening, but she couldn't even keep up. So documentation was slacking that day, I will say.
Which
And
everybody
that's the
knows
other thing.
documentation is key. That is the one thing you
Yes,
learn in
right?
nursing
And I'm
that will
like,
always be true. Documentation is key.
I know that the patient's life, that's
Right,
second.
right.
Documentation
Exactly.
first. But yeah, it was ridiculous. I was like, "Oh my God, there's my documentation. I don't even know what happened." But it took all of us to take care of that one patient. And if it wasn't for that teamwork, we wouldn't have gotten through the day. That patient wouldn't have made
So
it.
she
And as
survived.
quick as a recover, she yeah, I'm getting to
Wow.
that. Okay, so I didn't go the next day. I went, I think like two, it was 2 or 3 days later I came back. And I didn't see my patient, and I asked about her. I was like, where is my patient? You know, because I wanted to know what happened, because she gave us a run for our money, and none of us thought she'd make it. We all thought she was done. But come to the hall, find out she got extubated and she's in step down because I guess they needed the room too. So they went ahead and sent her to step down. But that step down does ICU stuff too. So she was in good hands. And I went down there to visit her and I was like, oh my God. Like I wanted to bawl my eyes out. I was like, you are a miracle. You are a miracle. I don't think you guys understand. I didn't tell them all this, but I did tell them, you are a miracle to be sitting here today talking to me. She was talking to me. She doesn't remember anything that happened, which you wouldn't, you know, losing all that blood and everything going on. It was a blessing. Her baby was good. She was good. They fully recovered. And it was a blessing to hear that. And I'm like, oh, thank God. All that work is so worth it.
Yeah, you know? Definitely to be able to go and actually talk to her. And, oh, man. I would definitely.
Yeah, it makes everything worth it. I know. I wanted to, but you have to hold back.
I'm not good at holding back. Like, the tears just flow.
I know. And it's good to see story, you know, cases like that, because you see a lot of heartache in the ICU, a lot of heartache.
And especially with all the COVID stuff going on too, like there's just so much death. Yeah. Like even now, like we thought that the vaccine's out, you know, everybody's wearing their masks. We thought that the death would, you know, be better, but we still have patients that'll come and be like, yeah, my dad died or my cousin died or my friend died. And I'm like, good gracious, like when is it going to stop?
Yeah. I know we all just want, can we just, you know, rewind or, you know, erase this from life? Like COVID never happened.
I mean,
or something.
I really do miss seeing people's faces.
Yes.
I can't remember a name worth of shit, but I can definitely remember somebody's face.
I know. I'll remember a face, but now I'm like, everyone looks the same.
I know.
With their mask. Especially with all that PPE.
Oh, yeah. But I will say, sometimes the masks come in handy. Because when I get a patient in clinic and they just will not be quiet, like, I will start mouthing to myself, can you please shut the hell up? Like, please shut the hell up.
Oh, my God. Yes.
Because they will
oh
just be going
God.
On
my
and
face
on and
tells
on. And I'm
it
like,
all.
Please be quiet.
My face tells it all. My boyfriend always is like, the look on your face anytime. And I'm like, with the mask, I'm like, oh, thank God for the
I know.
Protection.
I feel like I have a little confidence when I have the mask on. Like, I can say whatever I need to say and I'm good.
Right. I know that some of the places I've been to, it's actually very few. And I think hospitals should do this more often. They probably don't have, nurses don't have time anymore really to go in there, is meditation rooms or quiet rooms. There's like a little room where they have like the light dim, they have like, you know, the little sound waves and the incense stuff or whatever. It's not incense. What
like
is it?
Essential oils.
Yeah. All that stuff. And, you know, because sometimes you need that, especially when you go through certain cases, whether you're the patient or the family or whatever is making you mad, or if it's like a heartbreaking moment or anything, because we get a lot of gunshot wounds. We get a lot of trauma patients. We've had a nurse on our floor that was dying, got hit, and she was fine. And then she was getting a bath, and the next moment she just herniated.
Oh, wow.
She ended up dying. We donated her organs. That was very, very sad.
Mental health is so important, especially for the healthcare field right now. I mean, definitely utilize those meditation rooms and talk to people. I mean, it's great just to, you know, talk to one of your coworkers on an off day and just be like, look, I need to vent. Like, I need to get this off my chest because I'm struggling with it. And, you know, it never hurts to have, you know, even a professional help you with it.
Yeah, exactly. We all need to be there for each other, because doing things alone, it, like you said, teamwork, you're in it all together all the time. You can't do things alone, not in this industry. You're going to end up hurting yourself more. And, you know, it will affect the patient and the family members too, because I believe your attitude does have a big effect on family members and patients when you're at work.
Teamwork makes the dream work. That's what they say.
Big believer of that. Now there are some good cases or interesting funny ones, because nurses, we have a dark sense of humor sometimes.
Most definitely.
Because you have to in our industry. I remember, oh my God, it was on our floor. I don't know if you were working there or not though, but it was an older gentleman. I think he was like in Vietnam or something. He was a Vietnam veteran, and he had dementia and Alzheimer's and all. Somebody, I don't know why, it was around the 9/11 time where they were doing the memories and all that for showing the Twin Towers, collapsing, getting hit by planes and stuff. And he would constantly call the nurses' station, and he's like, "Shit's going down. Somebody is hitting the Twin Towers. Oh, somebody needs to call my wife." And I was like, oh my God. The first few times, it was hilarious, but I was like, okay, somebody please stop torturing
somebody
this poor
turn
man
the
and
channel
turn that.
For the love
yes,
of God, turn
yes.
the channel.
But every like 2 minutes he would call up the nurses station, and I'm like, sir, that happened like way back then.
That was in 2001.
Right. And then we had another time. This was actually in the ICU where we had an elderly lady. She ended up on the ICU. I think it was because of her blood pressure or something. But she ended up getting off the drips and started recovering and stuff. But she gave all the nurses scabies.
Oh, Jesus.
Because we were all, and it was Norwegian scabies, which is horrible and hard to get rid of. But we all ended up getting it because she was trying, she was confused. I think she had dementia too, but she was trying to leave the hospital on the floor. So she got butt ass naked and started running the hallway trying to escape. And here we all are trying to grab this naked woman that we didn't know had scabies.
Oh my, that just makes me itch. Like, it's like lice. If you talk right? about lice or scabies or anything like that, I'm just going to itch for like the rest of the day.
I know. I'm sorry. But yeah, it was hilarious though. It was.
That is the best part of being in the healthcare field is, of course, you have these sad moments, the depressing times, the crazy times, like with the pandemic. But, you have these funny stories that just you think back on. Like, I just remember when we worked together, if you heard a bed alarm going off, you better believe you were about to see me running down the hallway.
Oh, yeah. We're like, whoever gets there first wins 20
Dude,
bucks.
That was the cardio on night shift because those bed alarms would go off all the time. But, and we would just, you find things to do that with your coworkers who become family because you're with them more than you are with your family. That just made it worth, all, of course, helping the patients makes it worth it. But just establishing those relationships with your coworkers too just make it even better.
Yes. And you never know what people are going through at
right.
home. Some people are very good at hiding that and stuff, and they keep their personal life. Like, I keep my personal life private
right.
and stuff. But you never know what people are going through, so you can make them smile. We would mess with each other. The saline flushes, we'd squirt at each other.
Yeah.
The foam hand sanitizer, we put all over the seat. And, when you sit down, you ain't looking. We would cut up.
Oh, those were the good times. Those are the good
yes.
times. I mean, and right now, I mean, you can't really even have, those funny moments just because people are so overworked and just, like you said, burnt out.
Yes.
But I think we'll get there. We'll get there again.
We all need to remember why we started nursing and remind each other of
right.
that.
And talk about the good times and the bad. And again, mental health, like just go back to those good times, but then also work through the hard times together.
Yes. Now, for all the nurses out there, there is a quote that did help me get through. And I'll read it out if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
And I want to plaster this on my wall, honestly. I need some artwork though. I'm not that great. But basically it is, we wanted to give up. We all went home in tears. We second guess why we do what we do. We've all felt like failures at times. We all wanted to quit at some point, but then we remembered. We save lives. We comfort the sick. We can't expect that to be easy. So what we do is not easy. And what we see is heartbreaking, but we need to remember we're there to help these people that are there on the worst day of their
right.
life and probably going to be their last day. And I don't like my patients when they die alone.
Right.
I don't.
Right.
But sometimes you have to take care of somebody who you can save. But if I'm able, I will be in that room holding and praying and not letting that individual die alone.
Right.
That is something that I do try to do.
Oof, you gave me chills.
I'm sorry.
But, you know, that's the whole reason I got into nursing is my granddaddy has had, you know, he has CHF. He's had multiple blood clots. Like, he's not in good health. And one time he was in the hospital on his birthday, and this nurse who had no idea who he was, he was just her patient, you know, and he was her patient for several days, and she knew his birthday was coming up. She literally went home after a 12-hour shift, made him a cake, and brought it to him on his birthday.
Aww.
So, like, that's what I always think about. I'm like, you want to be that person who takes care of somebody else's family just as much as you would take care of your own family. You know, you want to be that person
yep.
who is compassionate enough to treat your own patient like your family.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's honestly what it's all, I mean, that's all, that's what it's all about.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we, and that's the other thing and why, you know, we're being burnt out is like, we're taking care of these people, but sometimes when we get home, we want to be taken care of too.
Right. Right. I mean, honestly, like, you know, they had the Times Women of the Year, and I, you know, don't get me wrong, I'm so happy there's a female vice president. Like, it's awesome. But at the same time, like, we have so many nurses who have put their life on the lines, and, you know, not just females, men too. But for them, you know, I've kind of felt like they should definitely have reevaluated who they chose as Woman of the Year, because 2020 was the year of the nurse. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. In the medical field, period. I mean, like, everybody in the medical field, like, I feel like a lot of people forgot about us the first few weeks. You know, we were being appreciated and everything,
right.
but now
and
it's like
off.
We're being forgotten. Yeah.
Right. And I'm not
and
political
there's
at all.
Still...
I'm just saying that
no,
it definitely,
I know. I
definitely should have gone. I felt like should have gone towards healthcare workers, whether it had been, you know, the cleaning people or, you know, just chosen a random person in the healthcare field who impacted greatly during the pandemic.
Exactly. Hey, I say after this, they owe us all a cruise.
I'm kind of nervous to go on cruises because that was like the big spreader.
Well, if it's all us healthcare people.
I guess you're right. I mean, I guess if something happened, we'd have each other to take care of.
Right. Or like, you know, we have our vaccine, stuff
True.
Like that. I don't know. Like, give us a spa day. Give us a
there
massage.
There you go.
Okay?
I will
That's
definitely
easier.
Take that. I will take a massage and a facial. And even though my trip to Italy got canceled in September,
Aww.
I'll officially go back.
Yeah, definitely got to make that trip.
Oh, I was so upset. That, I mean, of course, I was upset about COVID, but I'm like, damn, the one time I get to go to Europe, a pandemic breaks out. And it started,
what are the
like,
chances?
The biggest place was Italy. And I'm like, of course I don't get to go.
Yeah, you will eventually.
Oh yeah, I'll
maybe you'll be
better
again. By then.
I'd rather
you never know with technology
anyway,
advancing
so.
Yeah, you don't.
Well, Lisa, I appreciate you coming on for our first episode. We so appreciated having you here today.
Of course, thanks for having me, and I hope great things happen with your podcast. I look forward to hearing from all of them.
Oh yeah, and we look forward to having you back on so you can give us a little bit more detail as far as how it's going in the Army.
Oh, definitely. And if anybody ever has any questions about nursing, travel nursing, military, nursing in the military, just hit me up. You can hit me up on my Instagram. It's FitFan, which is FitFANN. And I'll be happy to help out any way I can.
Perfect. Thanks, Lisa.
Thanks.
We'll now go into our break room segment, which will include a listener story. Today's story is brought to you by Taylor in Atlanta. She's an RN who works on a cardiopulmonary unit. And here's her story. I had a patient that had abdominal surgery and had bilateral pneumonia, so he had two chest tubes. He had really bad pain from his abdominal incision and was suffering from diarrhea. He was also COVID positive. I was precepting at the time. We were having to wear N95 masks and surgical masks, as well as the face shields. The patient had called out, and it was a couple of minutes before we went in the room because we had to gown up. The room was hot because the patient was petite and was always cold. And when I walked in, there was literally shit all over the walls and everywhere. He had had explosive diarrhea and completely missed the bedside commode, and it had gone all over the place. We were trying to clean it up, and I don't know if it was the room temperature or what, but I threw up in my N95 mask, and I was trying to remain calm because I was precepting. We were trying to clean up, and the patient had chest tubes, so we were trying to make sure they didn't get pulled out. He's panicking and moving. I was trying to remain calm, teach, and maintain appropriate PPE. I had to allow throw up to remain in my mask while I taught in a hot-ass room, made sure the patient was stable, and cleaned up shit. Taylor, you are a hero, and I'm not quite sure how you did it, but God bless you. Thanks for sending in your story, and thank you for listening to our first episode of Nurse Talk. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review. Also, check us out on Instagram at Nurse Talk Podcast. If you have any crazy stories that you would like to share, be sure to email us at nursetalkpodcast@gmail.com. Or DM us on Instagram. Your story may be shared in our next episode. See you next time on Nurse Talk.